likely make it more difficult for President-elect Joe Biden to ease U.S.-China tensions.
That could be one reason the U.S. president seems to be cracking down on China. It is Friday, December 4th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the UN says the COVID pandemic is causing major problems for poor countries. South Asia students try to take tests during lockdowns. A cold winter lies ahead for many undergoing similar circumstances. At an Indonesian restaurant, you can eat your dinner as a fish eats your feet. That and more on today's VOA Asia. The Trump administration expanded economic pressure on China's Xinjiang province Wednesday, banning cotton imports from a powerful Chinese quasi-military organization that it says uses forced labor from detained Uyghur Muslims. Libby Hogan reports.
The U.S. banned cotton from one of China's largest cotton producers on Wednesday. A ban will be slapped on both cotton and cotton products from the Xinjiang Production and Construction Corps. The XPCC is a quasi-military organization that the U.S. says uses forced labor of detained Uyghur Muslims. The move is in line with the Trump administration's hardening approach to China and increased pressure on China's western region of Xinjiang, just weeks before President-elect Joe Biden is due to take office. It's expected to lock Biden into a position, making it harder for him to ease U.S.-China tensions. Homeland Security Secretary Kenneth Cuccinelli said the Made in China stamp should serve as a warning label, adding that, quote, the cheap cotton goods you may be buying for family and friends during the season of giving, if coming from China, may have been made by slave labor in some of the most egregious human rights violations existing today. The UN estimates that there are about 1 million Muslims being held in camps in Xinjiang, but China says the camps are vocational training centers needed to fight extremism. Major brands including Gap, Patagonia and Zara, who have spoken to Reuters, say they did not source from factories in Xinjiang, but couldn't confirm that their supply chains were free of cotton picked from the northwestern province. The U.S. Border Agency also said a region-wide Xinjiang cotton import ban was still being studied. U.S. apparel and textile makers have criticized a broader ban, saying it's impossible to enforce. But on Wednesday, clothing and retail groups welcomed the XPCC-specific ban. The business and paramilitary entity accounted for 30% of all of the cotton produced in China in 2015.
Libby Hogan reporting. China Thursday accused critics in the U.S. government of an escalation of political suppression against Beijing following a report of new visa restrictions on members of China's ruling Communist Party and their immediate family members. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Hua Chunying said China would make representations to the United States following the report Thursday in the New York Times that such people would be limited to 1 month single-entry visas. Hua called Washington's approach totally inconsistent with the U.S.'s own interest and said it would damage American global image. Stay with us on VOA Asia. Coming up, you'll hear more about what seems to be growing opposition between the United States and China. We invite you to read more on our top stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. China proposes new restrictions on foreigners and religious services. Hong Kong publishing tycoon and a pro-democracy activist is arrested again. Bloggers and activists stage a hunger strike over Vietnam prison conditions. Hundreds flee as Indonesian volcano spews lava and ash. Tropical cyclone headed for southern India after causing little damage in Sri Lanka. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and at the voanews.com website. We told you in the first segment about some things that China is doing and some things that the United States is doing that might have an effect on the next president of the United States as far as his China policy is concerned. To talk more about that with us here on VOA Asia is Patsy Witakaswara, the VOA White House correspondent. And Patsy, what about this? What about this crackdown, seeming crackdown by the Trump administration on China?
Well, I think in general, what Trump officials are planning to do or are discussing right now is a series of moves to either sanction or restrict trade with more Chinese companies with officials for, you know, a number of reasons, ranging from human rights violations in Xinjiang, like the story that you've mentioned, or even threatening U.S. national security. So, for example, Trump officials are also discussing expanding this Defense Department list of Chinese companies that they deem to have ties to the Chinese military. So just the number of reasons, increasing tension and increasing kind of animosity between the two countries as President Trump prepares to leave office in less than 7 weeks. Now, China has, of course, denied the accusations and saying that the U.S. is essentially concocting all these false news to suppress Chinese firms and China.
With only weeks to go in the Trump administration, why would he be doing something like this?
Well, the analysts that I've spoken to say that these moves are really designed to cement President Trump's legacy of hardline policy towards Beijing. And the other impact that it will do is that it will likely make it more difficult for President-elect Joe Biden to ease U.S.-China tensions. National Security Council spokesperson John Olyat recently said in an interview that unless Beijing reverses course and becomes a responsible player on the global stage, future U.S. presidents will find it politically suicidal to reverse President Trump's historic actions, unquote. This is something that's really interesting to pay attention to in these last weeks of President Trump's term, because analysts are also pointing out to the fact that the president is not just making it harder diplomatically for President-elect Biden in his relations, future relations with China, but also with other adversaries, including Iran. So analysts point out to the recent assassination of Iran's top nuclear scientist, which Tehran blames on Israel and the White House has not condemned. This will likely complicate President-elect Biden's plan to return to the 2015 JCPOA agreement, which suspends Iran's nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief that President Trump withdrew from 2018. So it's going to be a very interesting next couple of weeks to see what else President Trump may be doing.
VOA White House correspondent Patsy Witakaswara, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ira.
Happening now in Asia, South Korea has reached a deal with AstraZeneca PLC to purchase its coronavirus vaccine candidate as it seeks to secure supplies amid a resurgence of outbreaks, according to local media. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The UN Conference on Trade and Development reports the COVID-19 pandemic has had a devastating impact on most of the world's 47 least developed countries, whose economies have slumped to the lowest level in 30 years. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In this year's Least Developed Countries report, UNCTAD economists warn the current grim situation will not improve unless the world's poorest countries drastically boost their productive capacities. They report average income is likely to fail in at least 43 of the 47 LDCs, pushing 32 million people into extreme poverty. Director of UNCTAD's Division for Africa and LDCs, Paul Akiwumi, says LDCs need to focus on their productive capacity to diversify their economies so they can deal with the challenges of climate change, recession, and now COVID. He says LDCs must build up their productive human, natural, and capital resources and entrepreneurship to provide goods and services. This, he says, will enable them to grow and develop their economies.
Now, it is quite clear that LDCs, being commodity-driven, need to move forward in their development paradigm. And we've seen through the COVID crisis that because they're commodity driven, they've been able, and all the lockdown that has happened, they've been able to export less, and their revenues are down, the tax collection is down, and their economies have suffered considerably.
Akinwumi cites lagging international support as another problem. Because funding is down, he says LDCs have little money for social development and are unable to service their foreign debt. The report finds 8 LDCs, Bangladesh, Cambodia, Ethiopia, Laos, Myanmar, Nepal, and Rwanda, have modernized and transformed their productive capacities into better performing economic structures. It says Asian LDCs have increased their manufacturing capacity, which now accounts for 19% of their gross domestic product and 12% employment. The same cannot be said for African LDCs and Haiti. The report says manufacturing in those countries remains stagnant and accounts for only 9% GDP and just 5% employment. UNCTAD is calling on the international community to invest, finance, and support LDCs in their efforts to transform and rebuild their economies. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Japan may ban the sale of new gasoline engine cars by the mid-2030s in favor of hybrid or electric vehicles, according to public broadcaster NHK. That would align it with other countries and regions that are imposing curbs on fossil fuel vehicles. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia, Twitter, and Facebook. This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. This restaurant in Indonesia is offering a new kind of two-for-one special. Located in the country's cultural capital of Yogyakarta, Soto Kokro Kembang is offering pedicures by fish. The restaurant has placed its tables and chairs in ankle-deep water that is filled with thousands of little fish that nibble dead skin off the feet of diners. Anna Wadia, a visitor to the restaurant, found the concept interesting.
I think this restaurant has an interesting concept. We eat while having fish swimming below us. That's very unique. I've never found any place like this in the city, and the place is big enough to bring the whole family.
Restaurant owner Imam Noor opened its doors in June and offers his traditional Javanese soul food.
We offer a unique experience to eat soto, Javanese traditional food. Usually, you just eat soto casually, outdoor or indoors. But here, you eat soto at a fish pond. So you will have soto on your table and live fish below.
However, using fish is a service to remove dead skin has not been accepted everywhere throughout the world, as some cities in North America and Europe have banned the practice over concerns of bacterial outbreaks. Meet Robovi, a robot that is programmed with functions to help identify people who are not wearing masks and politely ask them to put one on. Developed by Japan's Advanced Telecommunications Research Institute International, Robovi is also programmed to help businesses maintain social distancing and provide guidance services inside the store thanks to its cameras and 3D mapping. Satoru Sataki, a researcher at the Research Institute, thinks that Robovi helps businesses in many ways.
I don't think there will be many occasions to call attention to wearing masks or social distancing, depending on the situation. With that alone, I wonder if the shop will not be able to use it. So instead, this time we have decided on a design and form where it can do some basic services combined together with a warning function if needed.
Koichi Oi, the store manager at Cereso Okaka, says the robot is helping the store run business.
At minimum, it can provide guidance to areas of product display in the voice of omotenashi, as in Japanese hospitality. So, from the staff's point of view, when the robot is here, it reduces one thing to do, and it is very helpful.
Robobi was installed in the Cerezo shop as a demonstration and will be there three times a week through December. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
Are my pets safe from coronavirus? There's no current evidence that cats and dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Nearly a half million South Korean students took their all-important college entrance examination Thursday. VOA Steve Miller spoke to reporter Jason Strother in Seoul to learn how health and education officials were stepping up efforts to prevent test sites from becoming a coronavirus hotspot.
This year's college entrance exam, the Sunung, as it's called here in Korea, is like unlike any other test that has been given. This is, of course, happening in the middle of the pandemic, and South Korea's education and health authorities are trying to prevent the 1,300 or so testing locations from becoming coronavirus hotspots. So for starters, all test takers, there's close to 500,000 of them today, have to wear masks. There are acrylic desk dividers between the test takers to limit the spread of any breathing in between the students. Windows are going to be kept open periodically to ventilate the room. Students are being told not to mingle during recess, and any student who had shown symptoms of COVID-19 or had tested positive in the previous days have been sent to special quarantined testing sites. There's around 86 or so of them around the country where they will be able to take the test in a more safe environment.
Jason, those are the plans, but have they encountered any problems on this day of testing?
Well, the Yonhap News Agency is reporting that a test examiner, a teacher, tested positive last night for COVID-19. So that teacher has been sent into quarantine, as is procedure here in South Korea. And Yonhap is reporting 14 other test examiners have also been sent into quarantine because they came into contact with that patient out of a precaution. The students will be taking the test they still have just some more hours left to go. Of course, Steve, this test is high stakes. It's widely seen as determining one's academic, professional, and even marital trajectory.
Right. And in years past, the streets lining up to the schools have been filled with fellow students, parents, people from society cheering on these students taking this college entrance exam. What's taking place this year?
Right. Even though it's a very anxiety-provoking day for many of the test takers, there's always sort of a festive atmosphere outside of the test centers. In years past, you show up to one of these centers and underclassmen, high school juniors, are out there cheering on their upperclassmen. The test takers are typically students in their third and final year of high school in Korea. It's a real party. And of course, mothers often are waiting outside of the gates of the school, the test center, until their children, complete the examination. But today, there's none of that. The Ministry of Education has pretty much banned any cheering squads, and they have gently asked the parents not to wait around outside the centers.
VOA Steve Miller with reporter Jason Strother in South Korea. With COVID-19 still out of control, low-income families in the United States are bracing for a cold and uneasy winter. VOA's Veronica Valderas Iglesias has more.
Thank you. picking up donations at the Salvation Army and other charity organizations has become essential for Erica Sanchez, a cash-poor mother of three in Washington, D.C.
Right now, it's helping us a lot because we don't have means to buy jackets, boots, so we come here and they give them to us.
The Mexican-born prep cook was laid off when the restaurant she used to work at closed thanks to COVID-19. She found part-time work collecting trash at an office building, but can barely make ends meet.
I used to earn $13 an hour in my day job. Now I earn $16.10 an hour, but only work 4 hours, so I can feel the difference.
The Salvation Army's spokesman, Major Srikant Nagar, said that with new unemployment claims nearing 800,000 a week, community needs are surging.
We are a rich country, but people is here also in the United States don't have food, don't have place to go out of pandemic because no job is available and people is suffering right now.
Hit with income cuts, many Americans aren't paying their utility bills. The piled up debt is at $24 billion, say energy aid organizations. Customers who can't get relief risk getting cut off in the cold winter. That has charities distributing winter coats in high gear. But they, too, are struggling against the pandemic.
The largest percentage of coat drives that happen every year are employee engagement coat drives. So many companies are still working remotely. So right now, we are down by 56%. Of coat drives that were happening at this time last year.
I have to show you one more thing.
It's not only warm apparel that's in need, says Jackie Horstman-Didio, whose nonprofit provides free education to preschool kids in Alexandria, Virginia.
Usually we would serve about 15% of families with things like rental assistance or different opportunities to access food and supplies and internet. But now we see that just growing up so much that so many people need those additional services.
And if the cold weather worsens the health crisis, as some scientists expect, there could be new layoffs. Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Washington.
We continue on VOA Asia. In Afghanistan's central Bamiyan province, women have enjoyed relatively more freedom than elsewhere in the country. But many of them are now facing an uncertain future. More from VOA's Aisha Tanzim.
Bamiyan has become known around the world for its 6th century Buddha statues that were destroyed by the Taliban in 2001. It is also one of the few places in Afghanistan where women have been cycling in public, wearing modern clothing, attending classes with young men. In the last elections, it was the only province in which women voters outnumbered men. 18-year-old Shakiba Aryan understands that the freedoms she enjoys in Bamiyan are not allowed in most of the country.
Bamiyan is so good, the situation, and I'm very happy about this. In the first, also, the Bamiyan was not the situation very good. But by the time, now it is better.
These freedoms are a far cry from life under Taliban rule in the 1990s, when women could not leave the house alone, could not go to school, and had to cover themselves head to toe. After nearly two decades of war, in September, the militant group started official negotiations with a government team for a political settlement. Simultaneously, the United States announced a troop drawdown as part of its own deal with the Taliban. Many in Afghanistan think the militants have the upper hand at the negotiating table and will walk away with the lion's share of power. And the women in Bamiyan have started wondering how that might change their lives. Many of these young women have grown up in a post-Taliban era. They have also lived in a province considered safer than the rest of the country. Tourists from other provinces come to Bamiyan for a respite from daily security threats. Born after the fall of the Taliban, these young women have grown accustomed to certain rights. And now the possibility of a Taliban return to power, even through a political deal, creates fear that they may lose all the freedoms. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Bamiyan.
Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.